Today is January 18th, 1990. The time is 7:30. This evening, the Madison Heights Historical Commission is going to interview longtime Madison Heights resident and educator Helen Hennessy. Mrs. Hennessy has been responsible for the educational development of decades of Madison School District students. Mrs. Hennessy, our first question. Please state your name and present address for this taped interview.
My name is Helen Anita Hennessy, and I live at 1712 Ann Terrace, Madison Heights.
According to our research, you were married and have four children. Please tell us the names of your husband and your children.
My husband's name was Mark, and my children's name, I had one daughter, her name was Peggy, and then I had three sons, Bill, John, and Mark.
Mrs. Hennessy, you were selected as an interviewee because of your years as a teacher for the Madison School District and your years of residence. How long have you lived in Madison Heights?
Well, as a child, I was 12 years old when I moved into Madison Heights in 1924. My mother had passed away about 2 years before then, and we lived with our grandparents, and my grandmother became ill, and my father owned a piece of, he owned an acre of land back of that Madison, old Madison High School. So in the meantime, he had built a home, and when I was 12 years old, I came into Madison Heights and kept house for my two sisters and two brothers and my dad.
Where were you born?
I was born in Detroit.
And
Detroit, Michigan.
What year did you move to Madison Heights, and why did your father decide, well, how did he pick Madison Heights to buy a piece of land?
Well, I think he worked with some friends, and they had owned land in Madison Heights, and he always liked to be out on the outskirts, so he bought an acre of land, and he decided to build a home, and there was just no question about it. We just moved to Madison Heights. It was like moving across the world. But
I believe you said you lived on Ferry in
Detroit. I lived on Ferry and Brush.
Yeah.
The original Ferry Seed Company owners lived across the street from us, and that was when I lived with my grandparents.
Okay. What year did you move? Well, let's see. When you moved to Madison Heights, Madison School District in 1924, was it called Madison, or was it still the Greenwood School District?
No, it was, as far as I can remember, it was always called the Madison School District.
Okay.
But Greenwood School was just part of the Madison School District.
Okay.
And it was located on John R. south of 11 Mile Road.
Okay. What was the name of the building where you first attended school, and where was it located?
The first building that I attended school as a child?
Right.
It was the Greenwood School on John R.
Okay.
And Mr. Smith was our principal.
That was, the Greenwood School was originally where? In front of Wilkinson, right around Wilkinson School.
It was, right on the Wilkinson, it was located on the Wilkinson land.
Okay.
And then the Madison School District, the little Greenwood School was moved to Lincoln and Wolverine, and the old Madison School was built on the same location on John R.
Okay.
And Craig.
Now, according to our records, the Greenwood School was a one-room schoolhouse.
Yes.
How did you get there each day, and what was it like as a student attending a one-room school?
Well, being a scholar, as usual, and we lived right behind the school, about a block away, so it was just running a path right from the back door to the school. Never missed a day, and we were never ill. We our school was our whole life. It was a good feeling just to be in school, I guess, because we'd be there alone. Dad would go to work, and we were there alone. We just had a wonderful, wonderful dad.
How many children were in the school when you attended? Just an estimate.
I think about 35.
About 35? Mm-hmm. They were all mixed grades.
They were all mixed grades. I know that I was into the fifth grade, but they put me into the sixth grade.
Okay.
Because of, I think it's because they either needed another seat or because I was just more advanced than the other folks. We, you know, like I knew how to diagram sentences, which those people, the people that were in school in my grade, or maybe she needed to have, maybe she didn't have a fifth grade. I can't remember that.
Who was your teacher? Do you remember your teacher?
Mrs. Shaw was one of our teachers.
Mrs. Shaw.
Yeah.
Now, there was one teacher for the whole school.
There was Mr. Smith and Mrs. Shaw.
Mr. Smith was the principal.
Mm-hmm.
Did he teach any classes?
He must have taught the boys' classes.
Okay. You said something about the school actually being divided too.
Well, the only part that was divided, the seats were in order, like the second grade and the third grade and the fourth grade, and then we'd go to the corner room to read as groups.
Okay. Now, you mentioned this already, but let's just put this in again. What happened to the Greenwood School in the late summer of 1926?
By that time, the Greenwood School was moved to Wolverine and Lincoln.
Okay.
And then the new school, the Madison High School, the one that was built in the 1925 or 6 or 7, I had graduated from the old Greenwood School. That was moved away, and I started ninth grade in the same location, but in another building. So I was there when the building was being built, and I was there when the school was being torn down, 50 years.
So where?
You just had to open the back door of the school.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Oh, it was wonderful.
So actually, you never changed buildings. You stayed in the same place. The buildings moved
now
around,
I'm
but you never did.
Now, I'm talking as a student.
As a student.
Because I graduated from Madison School, in 1930.
Okay.
And in 1930, that very June, I went to Eastern.
Okay, I have a question.
Okay.
Most women growing up in the early 1900s were not encouraged to seek an education. What can you tell us about your early family life that made your experience different?
Okay.
Who encouraged you?
Well, my encouragement came from my father.
Okay.
For one thing. However, I always had teaching on my mind. I never really thought of teaching, but I always had responsibilities of you do this. And so when we were at Grandma's, our outlet was going to the library. So nobody could talk to me and tell me to go and do this or go to the store or run here or do whatever, so that I would take my two sisters and two brothers and we'd end up at the library. We'd go to the library, and I think I read every book in the library, this big city library down on Woodard Avenue, and then we'd cross the street and we'd go into the Art Institute, and I knew where all the rooms were, the American room and the Egyptian room and you name it. We knew all the corners and crevices of the building. But Dad was the one that, he came from a family where people were educated, and when he came into our country, he came from Poland, and his brother was mayor of the town. Poland is a buffer state between Russia and Germany, so they lived near the Russian border, and the Russians were coming in and taking the Polish boys into the service. He was 14 years old, and because of his older brother being the mayor, he thought he would send my brother, because my father was an orphan at 7, but he lived with his brother. And so he sent the boy to America, to his uncle, who, and Dad came like around Annapolis, that area. And it was a mining area, so that he was too young to work in the mines, according to the uncle. So they sent him to Detroit, where he worked with another uncle who had a big bar, and my dad never drank or smoked, if Lois can verify that. But it was the idea that he had, I suppose as a youngster, he had seen so much of it at the bar. So when he was 18, he worked for Davis, the drugstore people. I can't remember.
Park Davis.
And then when Ford's opened up for $5 an hour, he went to Ford. And, of course, he was married, and They had five children, and I was the eldest. And my mother died when she was 33, after the birth of her child. And so we went to live with my grandparents. Well, my grandmother became ill, and, you know, can you imagine having five children move in on you? She was absolutely a darling. We adored her. And I don't know, God was with us because we all went to school. I have a sister who was an accountant. I have a brother who was an engineer. And I have a sister who was going to be a nurse. And we lost our money when the banks went down. But I don't know. Whatever we did, I became a teacher. And my whole life was absolutely nothing but going to school. And I went to...
I have one question before you go into that. How did you finance your first 2 years of college? I think this is interesting.
Oh, well, my father was working at Ford's, and you know he had the five children to support. Can you imagine a man with five children living alone, and we each had a job, and if we brought a B home from school, it was next time you bring in an A, or else we'll have to go and visit the teacher. Well, you know, that I couldn't have my father go and talk to the teacher. That would be very embarrassing. But anyway, the question, how we didn't have any money. Dad was working, and it was during the Depression, and we went to Grandma's, and they had the money. But Grandma, you know, like in those days, 50 years ago, a girl going to college, forget it. She's going to get married and have children and be home. So my dad and I, he didn't have a car in those days. We took the bus, the John R. bus. You paid a nickel on the bus. And we went to Highland Park to the household finance. And he borrowed my first money to go to school at the household finance. And as he put up our home.
As collateral for your education.
Collateral for my schooling, can you imagine? But, oh, I went to school and...
Now, your first 2 years, you went to Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after that, you were granted a lifetime certificate that qualified you as a teacher. Did you start to teach after you got the certificate?
Oh, definitely. Right there, the very September after the 2 years were over, Well, see, I was only like 18, 19 when I started teaching. And the reason I got this job so quickly was because Mrs. Magel was the superintendent of schools here in Madison Heights. And, of course, how convenient it was for me to live where I lived. I walked to Edison School, and 9 years I taught school between 7 and 9 years and never missed a day walking back and forth to school every morning, you signed a contract and you were never late and you never, whatever. But,
did they have a lot of rules for women teachers back in those days?
The rules were, number one rule was you wore a smock. And a number two rule is when you were married, you never received your contract.
After you were married?
After you were married.
So when you started, you only taught 1 year because you got married, right?
No, I was graduated in 1930, and then between 1930 and 1938, I taught school. I went to school in the last 6 or 7 years. But when I was married, I had been going with my husband, whom I met in Madison Heights, and you didn't have your contract signed if you were married. Well, you know, like, I was having a good time, and I didn't want to know if I was going to get married or not. But the way I was raised in being responsible for my sisters and brothers. And my dad happened to be injured at work, and so the year that I was going to be married, like 36, 37, I said, we can't, because I was responsible for my children, for my sisters and brothers. And I didn't know if Dad was going to live because he was badly hurt at work. But anyway, what is another question?
Okay, what was the first school you taught at when you came to Madison?
First school I taught at was at the Edison School.
Okay.
And I taught there for like 6 or 7 years. And then I was married. And the thing of it was, I had signed my contract in April. And my husband said, we either get married or else. Because we had been going 2 or 3 years before that, you see. And so I thought, well, okay, this is it. So we were married in July. And I couldn't tell anyone that I was getting married because I had already signed my contract in April. So that I thought, well, I'll just teach the 1 year and then let's go. Besides, my husband didn't want me to teach because he thought he was the breadwinner. So I had taught that 1 year, and then the next year I was home and I could see the children going to school and, you know, like, I would be ironing shirt and burn the tail doing it and all that stuff. But other than that...
Did you ever teach at the Kendall School?
Well, of course.
Okay, now that was when? That was after you were off for being
was,
married.
That was in after I was married, 39,
okay.
About 39,
okay.
40.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Mrs. Hennessy, when you went back to work and you were a married teacher,
mm-hmm.
How did that affect your contract?
Well, what I did, because I didn't think I'd ever teach again after I was married. But when I went back to teaching, you know, we had the money in the teacher's like an insurance. So I had taken my money out, and that meant if I wanted to go back to teaching, I'd have to reinstate my money, and I don't know, you know, $200 or $300 in those days. And so I reinstated my money, and so I didn't lose any. I think I lost maybe 5 years.
Like a pension.
Yeah, like my pension. I put my pension money back, but I lost some years of teaching. They didn't give me, they only gave me 5 years of whatever teaching I had. I think I had maybe 7 or 8 or 9 years, but I only received 5.
They didn't keep you teaching without a
contract?
Oh, honey, I
Did
went
you
back.
Have a provisional contract? Or?
No, I went back to the University of Detroit, and I went back to Michigan, and then I received a degree, my degree from Wayne, and I had 2 degrees from Wayne. I had I had a special education degree, and I had a degree in science and English. So I have a lot of credits, university credits.
There were
because
so many teachers during that time who lost a part of their retirement because the school districts kept them floating.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to give them a permanent contract.
Well, I was really very fortunate. My first year of teaching, very sincere teaching at the Edison School. And the superintendent of schools, which is Mrs. Mayo, called one at a time to her office, and she'd say, now, you go and you tell Mrs. Anderson to vote for Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Gunter, or whoever on the board. And, you know, like, naive, oh, Mrs. Nagel, I wouldn't think of telling somebody how to vote. My father, I didn't even know if he was a Democrat or a Republican. We didn't dare to ask any. That was his private deal, you know. And she's telling me to go and tell these people to vote or whatever. So I told her. So what happened? I did not get my contract signed the next year. But I didn't tell my dad because he would have a broken heart for sure. And so what did I do? But I walked to 13 Mile. There was a building there on 13 Mile and John R., which was like the board office of Lanphier School years ago. But, you know, I never got there. I got cold feet and I came back home. And in the meantime, that very day or the day after, we were called to court. Can you imagine me going to Pontiac to court to tell them that, you know, we were being, they had us out of the building. In the meantime, I had my contract signed, but Magel wouldn't let us go back into the building. She had an injunction against the teacher that didn't do her bidding. So we were out October and November. Isn't
that? Yeah. Look at that teacher over there.
Oh. That sounds like Russia.
Yeah. And so this is a cold winter, icy. Oh, we're driving to Pontiac, and we're in this court, and I never got to say anything because I probably was like a mouse sitting someplace in the corner, but we had Miss Tomlinson and several of the other teachers who were very outspoken, and anyway, she lost. She was taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Magel. Mrs. Magel lost. And we were all reinstated. Talk about happiness for myself. I didn't want to be a loser for my father's sake. I mean, you know, he was always I remember when I had my retirement party, the teachers gave me a party at Kingsley Inn, and I had so many people there. It was just so beautiful, and my dad, my sister flew him in from Texas. He came in, and I had my sisters and my sons and my little family.
Wait, before you retire, we got some other things. We don't want to get you, we still got 50 years to go over here.
You were talking about Mrs. Magel left was 1935.
Okay. Mrs. Magel left in 1935.
Mm-hmm.
In
they
fact,
fizzled her name off the school, by the way.
Lois remembers her being carried out of the school building. Lois was
that
a student.
Right. Picked up the chair and carried chair and all.
Oh, my
God. Oh, she was.
They
she,
did what?
They picked up the chair, two men on this side, and they carried her out, sitting her in the front where the horseshoe was.
Okay, Helen.
Yes, they did take the Magel name off the building, and they put the Edison School instead.
Helen, you kind of mentioned this. What were your specialties while you were teaching?
My specialties? Reading was
okay.
One of my specialties.
Okay.
Because I finally became a reading teacher as well. And, I was chairman of the science
department. Yeah, you had some other positions, too, while you were...
And that was in junior high.
Okay.
And, oh, I had charge of the baseball team at the Edison School and the charge of the safety, what is it, the safety squad? Yeah, safety.
So you wore a lot of hats.
You were asked to do it and you just did it.
Didn't you even have one of the first adult education classes?
Yes.
What was it?
I had a women's gym class at the high school for 2 hours. The first hour we took exercises, and the second hour they killed me playing basketball. I think Lois was in one of the classes.
Today's student discipline can be a problem. What techniques did you use when you were disciplining students?
Well, the thing is, when I think back, say, 30 years, the parents, I'm not saying that they were more interested. They had more time to take with their children because the mothers were at home. And they would help them at home with homework. Or today, we have new techniques in math, for instance. And the parents are not educated in the new techniques of math. If I said to you, give me another name for four. If you don't know what four is, another name for four. I mean, it's so simple, but yet it's a new way of thinking. Teaching is thinking, teaching how to think. Another name for four is two and two. But then you have a smart youngster and you'll say, oh, I know another one, 100 less 96, or a Roman four, or F-O-U-R, or you can name all kinds of combinations, and that is another name for four. So is it, do you say two and two is four, or two and two are four? It depends on how you look at it. Four is a unit. So if it's a unit, you say is four. some of the techniques that I would use, I would always get the reading problems because it wasn't that you knew so much about reading, you knew how to handle children. I have Diane Cagle, is president of the school board, and I had her in the first grade. And those kids, when they had the class reunion after 30-some years, they invited the old teacher, could you imagine, after all these years, to their class reunion. But when I'm thinking back of the techniques that I had in reading, how do you know where a child should know or be when he is reading, when he learns to read? Or here I had in junior high, I'm going too far, I know, in junior high, children that could not read. Think, in the public school system, we have four kinds of diplomas. We have a college-bound kid. We have a business person. We have a vocational person, and then I call this the fan dancing person. If you know what I mean. They don't do anything. They just dance around and goof around. So, but they all get a piece of paper and they all cross the stage and everybody says, oh, all these people are graduating. They do not know that these kids, you can't graduate 100% of people and they will know everything 100%. Because they are on different levels. So here we have the C-level youngsters. They read and they work and they go to college. Depends if they have all the qualifications here. But understand, in the public school, we have to educate 100% of the students. In a private school, your parents pay for your education, and if you don't do well, the professor or whoever says, hey, we can't deal with this kid has, you know, they don't put up with any of this stuff. Here we put up, you'll give a child an assignment, and he will say to you, are you crazy? You think I'm going to do this 10 times? You know, like, so that in 20 years ago or 30 years ago, you had a more of a rapport with the parent. If the child wasn't doing well, the parents would come to school, and you know, you knew all the parents. One of my techniques was, even like in junior high, I would have the parents come in of an evening, and they would sit in the child's seat with their books. Do you remember that, Mrs. Mills? And I would explain to the parents what was required of that child for that semester. Maybe not all the people would do it, but most of my people were always welcome, and I always had a room full, and I worked with the parents, which was something that a lot of the teachers don't do today. They just have too much of everything else going. When astronauts were beginning to do their deals, I was teaching first grade science at the time, and this little David Dawson came up to me. He says, Mrs. Hennessy, you forgot one planet. And I thought, Pluto and Jupiter, and I started naming the planets. I said, no, David, we have all the planets. He said, no, you do not. You forgot planet X. But it was just the idea that he was so aware of the planets, and we had such a good time. What are the English group of
Beatles?
The Beatles. When Beatles. The Beatles landed, oh man, I had pictures of the Beatles all over because it was such an interest. And so I made a reading lesson out of it with the names and what name begins with so and so and so. How many names begin with K or how many names with B? And so it was. Everything that I did, or the techniques that I did, was involved, revolved, or involved classwork.
Keeping the students interested.
It was.
And the parents interested in the students. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And many times I would get foreign students come in from different countries during the war. The prisoners of war families were brought in, and they would bring those. I had two little girls in there. They were so frightened and they could not speak. So I said, is there anyone in my room that knows another language? And this little youngster, and I thought, oh, isn't that nice? What do you speak? And he said, I speak Kentuckian. It was funny because he thought that it was a language.
Okay, I have a couple other questions for you.
Oh, no.
Who was your superior? We're going to get back to Kendall School a little bit. Who was your superior while you were at the Kendall School?
The only superior that I remember was Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith.
And, I mean, you know, when you're 12 years old.
No, I'm talking about when you were teaching at the Kendall School.
Oh, Mr. Wilkinson.
Mr. Wilkinson. Okay. What can you tell us about Mr. Wilkinson? Anything?
Mr. Wilkinson was one prince of a grand man. Just a prince of a man. He, if you asked him a question, he would answer a question, but it was either yes or no, but it was in the middle, and he never caught himself in anything. It was,
Defense writer is what you're trying to say.
Oh, it was really, you know, like, but he was such a wonderful man. If you had something, if it was a family business, or if it was a child's business, or if you had any problem, I felt like I could just go and tell him. I was very fortunate to work with my rapport with my teachers, with the teachers that were in the building, wherever I worked. We just had wonderful teachers.
Now, when you were at Kendall, it was on the Kendall property, mm-hmm. right?
Mr. Kendall was a farmer, and he had this huge piece of land. I don't know how many acres, must have been 10, 20, 20, 30 acres. And on the corner of one of the acres, they sold the land to the school, and that's where they put the Kendall School.
That was on the corner of Wolverine and Lincoln, right?
Yes, okay.
Okay. And then you taught, how, you, go ahead, Darryl.
It ran from 11 Mile Road to at least Lincoln.
Yes.
East and west, I don't know. How far it went west?
It stopped there in front of the Chaka's house.
Chaka's?
Yeah, 9 Mile, Lincoln. And then this is it.
Because I live
Lincoln.
Within a block of 11 Mile Road, and that's Kendall District.
Oh. Do you remember what year you taught there?
Well, it would have been maybe 37.
And how many years were you there?
One or two, I can't remember.
One or two. That's close enough. Do you remember what became of the Kendall School?
Yes.
What finally happened to it?
It was moved, and it's now located on the 11 Mile Road east of John R., a block east of John R. That's the Kendall School.
Okay, that's in front of the United Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm. It's a little white building.
Okay, that's the one they're using as the activity building.
I guess so.
It's kind of a storage deal.
Okay. Okay, now...
What question are you on, sir?
We're moving all over the place. You're a fast woman to keep track of. Can you tell us about any of your other administrators besides Mr. Wilkinson?
Well, if any of you remember Don Scott, he was a very outstanding man, and to talk about knowing how he handled the students and the teachers, I think we ate out of his hand if he just cupped it out like that. We'd do any bidding. Although he, being a chairman, for instance, being a chairman of a department, you have to take care of the books, you have to order the books, you have to have meetings with the science teachers, and you know, if you have 6 teachers or 10 teachers, to come to a meeting at one time, it would be like pulling a leg. But it was up to me, and so I had it for 3 or 4 years. And
Was where, Wilkinson?
Yes, it
Wilkinson.
Was at the junior high. My last few years were at the junior high. I would I went to the office, and I said, Mr. Scott, I do not want to be chairman anymore. Let someone else be the chairman. So I figured, well, that's it. I don't want to do it anymore. But, you know, it's like, no, yes. And finally, I was called to the office, and he said, Hennessy, you have charge of ordering these books. Some new books had to come in. So I was automatically the same old thing over again. But I did a lot of things because I suppose I was there every day. They could depend on me. It wasn't that. It was just part of my life.
Okay.
As I have written here, it says 44 years have gone by. Where does one begin? And then I said, in 1930, I graduated from the Madison school system. The very summer began my university life. My father was a great believer. I told you all what, and he borrowed money from the household to me, and of course, it took me 3 years to pay it all back.
Name some of your noteworthy students. There's some people that...
Oh, I have Larry Beecher, Dr. Larry Beecher, who has given me my glasses. When I go over there, I feel like I'm taken out to lunch and taken over to his home to meet his wife and the whole bit. And I have Robert Jesswine, who became a lawyer in California, and he was admitted to the bar by Richard Nixon.
Diane Cagle, who's on the Madison School
Diane,
Board.
Oh, I have all these kids' names over here someplace.
Bernie
Travnikar.
Now, Bernie is what? Bernie's Special Services for Lamprey School District?
No.
Oh, the other. Oh, yeah. Okay, that Bernie.
No, and that Bernie, I had a Thunderbird, beautiful red, maroon Thunderbird with white leather seats, and the kids came over one day and said, Mrs. Hennessy, could we use your car in the parade, in the football deal, whatever they call it,
homecoming,
so I thought, sure. You know, you press the button, the top went up, and you press the button, the seats would go back, and all that. It had everything on it. So they took my car in this parade, and I was sitting up in the bleachers, and it wasn't coming back, and it wasn't coming back, and I was kind of worried. So I said to one of the fellows, would he drive me up to the school to see if it was on the school parking lot, because that's where they were to. So Bernie, the young Bernie, standing on the corner, and he said, oh, did you like the parade? And I said, it was wonderful. I said, you have included all the clubs and all the members, and it was just absolutely beautiful. And I said, and what is your name? He said, oh, my name is Bernie Travnikar. I said, oh, I was your father's teacher. He says, oh, no, he's too old. I always tell that to Bernie, he's too old. And then I had Mr. Sikorsky.
What happened to your car?
Oh, I brought his home, of course.
Oh.
Yeah. It finally got there after we waited, you know, maybe 2 hours, but I think folks took it out for a little drive. They had to go have a little fun, you know.
Okay, what year did you retire?
In 76, but I never retired because...
You're doing something right now.
Yes.
Who's benefiting from your expertise now?
Well, I am teaching at the Senior Citizen Center. I have 2 days of high school teaching. I'm teaching the seniors to finish high school. And I have no behavior problems. And when they start talking, I'll say, no more twittering, please. And they go, you know. But we've had some very interesting classes. Last semester, I taught Marco Polo's journal 700 years ago, and I found a book by Tim Civeron. He took the same trip. He wrote the journal, his journal, and he compared, and we compared his journal with Marco Polo's journal going to Silk Road from Europe, across Europe into Asia. And it was a very interesting class that we had. And of course, they hate English, but I'm also an English teacher. And anyway, it's a requirement by the state, your English and your government. So this semester we had the government, state government and the country's government. Plus we had a literature discussion class, and we read The House of Seven Gables by Mark.
You also tutor kids at home.
And I have three students that I tutor at home. In the meantime. And in the meantime, I go to the center and play pinochle.
I have. You told me a story about one special student, and to me, it sums up all of your philosophies and everything about teaching. His name was Kenneth Williams. Tell us this Kenneth Williams story.
Kenneth Williams, if you know of a young boy who's tall and big and handsome, and people are laughing at you because you get up in class and you can't read. So Mr. Scott said to me one day, could you give this little fellow a hand? And so he and I, there used to be a little old library room, and it was not used as a library anymore because they had another room that was used as a library, and this was across from the office. Everyone would, he was one of these youngsters that would fight at the drop of a pin because he was so frustrated. Can you imagine now, my teaching philosophy is, if you can think of a cone, and on the top of the cone it's independence. And if I gave you a book on atomic energy, you could read it beautifully, but you would not understand it unless you were versed in it. So if you are not reading with understanding, you are not reading, you're just mimicking words, okay? So then you go to the next level, and in the next level you have instructional. That's the instructional level where the mother or the teacher or someone tells you the new words in your reading and tells you some of the skills. For instance, you were reading the word citadel or city, and you would call it kitadel because you don't know. When you use a C next to an I, it has the S sound. If you have a C next to an E, it has the S sound. If you have a C next to an O, it has the K sound. So if you don't know these skills, so I'm teaching this child instruction.
Kenneth Williams.
Mm-hmm. He goes into his corner, and he still can't read the words because, you know, he doesn't have the background in phonics, and I'm a very believer in phonetics. So he comes back. Now I have instructed this child, and he's gone to independent reading, and he becomes so frustrated that he doesn't want to read at all. And so he becomes a nuisance in class, and all through school, he's moved around here and there and all over, and he comes in, he has no background in any kind of techniques in reading, any phonics or any background. So now he is in the frustration level. So what I do with that child, I take him to the listening level. And in the listening level, I'll read a story to him on the first grade, on the second grade, on the third grade, on the fourth grade, and I'll ask him questions for him to answer to what I have read to him so that he's listening. Is the cart red? Or what color is the cart? Or how many children in the family? Or something about each story. So here I have this child reading, listening on a 10th grade level, and he's only on a 3rd grade reading level. So he should be here, but he's here. So that this is where you bring him up in the different techniques.
Now, what did he do?
I worked with him. He was bright, and he really wanted to read, and I had him so fired up that he was just going to read like nobody's business. He went, I think I had him about 7 months of the school year, and finally he went... He went into his social studies class, and he read a paragraph for the teacher in the whole class. They were just floored. And he ran into the office and said to Mr. Scott, "Mr. Scott, I read my story the first time." And, you know, he was so thrilled. But talking about back to reading, I was a reading first grade teacher for a long, long time. In fact, when I went back to first grade, I was only going to help out for 2 weeks till they built up their staff. because they had a new building. So Mrs. Hennessy was there for 2 weeks, and I stayed there for 15 years. And they used to say to me, well, when are you, they ever going to graduate you from the first grade?
That's when you taught at Monroe. Mm-hmm. That you could see them building that one from outside your house.
Yes. Oh, I went in. I just asked Mr. Wilkinson. I used to go see how far they would, how much they had done the night before or the day before on the building. And so Mr. Wilkinson was there, and I said, oh, Mr. Wilkinson, how about a job? You know, I was, so the next day he called me. Could I just, and I had never taught first grade, but I loved it. I just enjoyed every bit of it. And anyway, going back to the reading part, it's very gratifying when you have people come in and really learn something, and you know that you were the one that helped for that person to really know that he could do it. This boy was so thrilled.
You can tell how much they appreciate it just by the fact that they still keep all of these kids, a great many of them keep contact with you even today.
Yes, I do. Well, of course, I've lived here all the time, so they know me. You know, I feel like a pillar in town.
That leads to my last question. You lived and worked and raised a family in Madison Heights for 65 years. That's a long time in one community. What is it about Madison Heights that kept you here all these years?
Well, I think my teaching. You know, I had so much respect for the community, and the community has respect for me. Wherever I go, I have a warm feeling, and I bought my home here, and I raised my family here, and I just felt like part of living.
Do any of the historical commission members have any questions that they'd like to ask Mrs. Hennessy?
Yeah.
What was your maiden name?
Your name, please.
Yes. Oh, my maiden name.
Darlene
Barrett. Okay.
My maiden name was Helen Janus. Janus means day in Polish. I'm Polish.
How do you spell that?
D-Z-I-E-N-I-S. Janus. The D-Z is the G sound.
Anyone else?
I think that Helen should put on record the year that she got her degree.
This is Lois Myers?
Lois Myers. She mentioned a certificate, but then remember you had to go back and get your degree. Tell them what year, because somebody reading that years ago might think that she never did have one. She did.
Well, I think I said that.
Go ahead, give it to us anyway.
I think I received it in 1956.
1956, and you went to several schools, Eastern Michigan,
yes.
U of D, Wayne.
In Michigan.
Michigan. And Wayne.
And, that's it.
Yeah.
And U of D, did you mention?
Yep, U of D, too.
Whatever happened to...
Connie Schmelzel?
Whatever happened to Harry Williams? What did...
I don't know. He probably moved away. But I also had another person. His name was Dwight... I was going to say Dwight Eisenhower, but it was... Dwight Ellison, and he could not read a word, but he knew more about science. He was a listener, and he was also in junior high, but I had him when he was like from the second grade on. He would come to my home, and he graduated from high school with honors, but he said he didn't have to know how to read. His father didn't know how to read, so why should he learn how to read? That attitude, you know. But there are many instances that were just special.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us this evening. You've added another treasure to our historical collection.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It was a delight. I'm glad it's over.